Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Chris Wright. My company is Wright Works. I'm a builder remodeler in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to our webinar session for Remodel Crazy about sales and lead qualifying. With me as a co-panelist is Darren Sayer of Absolute Basement Finishing in, you consider yourself St. Louis, or are you in some suburb?
You know, I'm a suburb outside of St. Louis, where it's a little bit cheaper and a little bit cleaner to live, Wentzville, Missouri.
Nice. Okay. So today we're kind of going to talk about lead qualification and kind of the early stages of the selling process. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, we have a little bit different approaches, a little bit different backgrounds and companies, and we have two participants here today we're going to talk to about their process for lead qualifying and what their challenges are at the moment, and hopefully you'll get some benefit out of that. A little bit of background on me. My earliest selling experience was in retail. You know, I like many people, when I was in school, I worked at a video store. I worked at a computer game store for a while, and, you know, most of it was order taking, you know, by and large. It wasn't until I got into martial arts and I started, I was the program director for the school, so I gave introductory lessons, and it was basically one-on-one selling. And martial arts industry, like any industry, has its own set of business gurus, so I got to go to their seminars, much like we have them at trade shows, and they had their own process, and, you know, we had lead qualifying for the school. You know, someone would come up wanting information, they'd give us a call. And our goal was to try and get them to come in for an introductory lesson. And then at that introductory lesson, we would, you know, show them what we were capable of, if it was a child or an adult. And then we would try to get to sign them up for a contract for 12 months of lessons. So it was, you know, it was probably a lot like health club selling, which is probably just one stage above, or probably below, auto sales. But it was uncomfortable for me. I was not a natural salesperson. But I did learn a lot from that experience, and the primary part of it was connecting with the fact that we were delivering a really high value to our students and to the parents that came to our school. We, you know, they got a lot out of the program. And for that reason, I guess I got more and more comfortable, because I knew what they were getting was valuable. And it was just a matter of demonstrating that value and getting them to see it and to sign up. Today, I've had my company, my construction company, for about 12, 13 years. And in the early stages, I did everything like most of us do in the beginning. I was doing the selling. I was writing the contracts. I was building things. I was invoicing. I was doing all the, you know, I wore every hat. And when I was smaller, I probably didn't connect with lead qualifying. If you called me up, chances are you got me in your house and I was looking at your project. And that's not necessarily a bad approach for you. If you have the time, if maybe your lead, you know, if you don't get a ton of leads, or maybe your sales skills are not really, really strong, I see no problem with, you know, running every lead, and I know a lot of people have that philosophy anyway, because I think it's instructive for you to get in front of people to hear what they're like on the phone, and then to go see what they're really like in person. And, you know, sometimes the ones that aren't a good fit are the most instructive appointments to go on, because you can maybe then start to draw lines for, okay, this is maybe the kind of person that is maybe not a good fit. And when I say good fit, it's not some elitist thing. We can't be all things to all people. I can't go build every project for everyone that wants one here in town. You know, some people are too far away, and logistically it doesn't make sense for me. Some people have, you know, they live in areas that the real estate values are such that I can't make a project work for them. They're just not going to get the value out of it. So my own approach these days, because we are, you know, we are very busy, especially at the moment, we qualify pretty heavily. In the early stages, again, as I said, when it was just me, you know, if you called me up, I was going to go out and, you know, I was going to look at your project and I was going to try and make it work. What I learned through hard-won experience, when I got beat up on a number of projects that did not go well, I connected with the fact that I needed to say no to some kinds of projects and to some kinds of clients. And I think for me, that's where qualifying starts, is trying to understand, you know, who your ideal client is. And that goes back to, you know, Darren and I participated in a marketing webinar over a year ago that we had on RC that we both found very instructive. And it was really about connecting with, okay, who is it that we really want to work for? How do we get more of those people to call us up? Identify them when they do call up so that we can make sure that those are the leads that we go on. Darren, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what your, I guess, your philosophy or approach is to qualifying.
Thank you, Chris. You know, I started out, I graduated high school in 84, started building new houses with a partner who had money in 85. And we probably built 12 or 15 houses over the next 2 or 3 years, and then he kind of decided he wanted out of it. When my funding dried up to build new houses, I turned to remodeling, and, you know, at this point I'm probably 22 years old, never really held a job outside of high school. My qualifying at that time, you know, if the phone rang, I went, and my pricing, believe it or not, usually consisted of what I thought I could guess the customer was willing to pay for a job. And, you know, if there's a bunch of things all that'll gang up to make an instant failure, you know, I probably did every one of them. But I struggled through for probably 8 or 10 years that way. You know, I never really got ahead of the ball. You know, I was always interested in learning. I always tried to learn everything I could. But at that time, there was no internet, so you couldn't just hop on a forum, find a bunch of guys who had already been where you were and needed to, you know, where you wanted to try to get. So there was a lot of trial and error, and it took forever. So finally, you know, I went to work for Champion Window and Enclosure as an outside salesperson. And that's a tough game, man. When you're working for them guys, it's a one-call close. You know, this is probably back in the mid-90s. We're selling $750 vinyl windows, $450, $500 a square vinyl siding. And my training consisted of the owner taking me aside and saying, okay, here's my pitch book with all my pictures and everything. Copy this. Run a couple appointments with me. Go get them. And I probably didn't sell a thing for 6 months. And then I finally started invested in some sales training. You know, I kind of started learning what I was doing wrong. I left there 2 or 3 years later at the top of the game for them. I trained most of their new guys. I was the highest dollar volume salesperson in the last 6 months that I was there. So, you know, there's the best way to learn to sell is to have to feed yourself off of what you make selling. You know, that's you know, just getting thrown to the wolves, I guess, worked really well for me. As things are now, you know, my average ticket is probably around $70,000. So it doesn't take a whole lot of jobs for me to stay busy. So I can be pretty selective as to who I go out and talk to. You know, a guy that does gutter guards obviously is going to need to talk to a lot more people and is going to have a lot less lax of a selling or a qualifying process, but he's probably also going to be talking a lot less dollar volume too. You know, that might be an $1,800, $2,000 job, something like that. So most of the people that he talks to will already know about what it's going to cost, and they'll probably be fairly well qualified. Really, that's about it. You know, I spend a lot of time talking with people on the phone, and Chris and I talked. You know, I said that I really didn't do a whole lot of qualifying, but just through the natural course of having an initial half-hour consultation with somebody on the phone before we ever go out and talk, I can decide whether it's going to be a fairly good fit for me or not, and that's the way I approach things today.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you know, you have a, you know, I've often admired your approach to selling and your background, because I think it, you know, you come from a, you know, you come from a very, you know, what I would call a pure sales background, selling, you know, windows and doors for Champion, and it's clear that you were exceptional at what you did. And I just find it interesting to listen to you talk about how you apply some of the things that you learned then to your business today. And I'm very similar in terms of our qualifying process is much more about a conversation. There are some things that we use to You know, they're just a pure qualifying question. Where is your home located? You know, geographically, I try to limit myself to an area that I know. You know, some people drive all over the place for projects because that's the area that they live in. They just don't have the luxury of just working close to their headquarters, be it out of the house or be it out of an office or a shop. For me, I know that the closer I stay to my office, the easier it is for me to manage projects, to move people around, so we try not to go too far out. So that's one of my early, qualifying questions is, where is your home located? Because I just flat out can't service people that are too far away. And then the conversation kind of flows from there. I guess instead of really talking at length about how I do things or how Darren does things, why don't we talk one at a time? Owen, why don't we talk to you first? Tell us about, your company, how big you are, what your marketing process is like and what you do. What do you do for qualifying now and what do you find the challenges are to how you do it now?
Hey, Chris, if I could make one comment before Owen gets started.
Oh, sure.
You mentioned that the geographical qualifier, which I think is very important if you're going to do a job of any size at all. You know, my average job is 8 to 12 weeks, so, we've got to be fairly close to home. I was on Paul's website last night, and I think Len did his website, and he actually has a page, what geographical areas do we cover. And I think I'm going to add that to my website, because I think qualifying can start all the way back at your website. If a prospect clicks on that and says, oh, look at this, they're not even inside I'm not even inside the area they service, they're not going to call. So, you could actually weed out at that point too.
No, I totally agree that your marketing, and if we're talking in terms of online, I think all of your materials should be part, should be considered part of that qualifying process. If there are things that automatically would eliminate someone, like if you don't do a certain type of project, I think the more clarity you have about who your ideal client is or what you offer or the kinds of projects that you do, the better chance you are, or the less likely you're going to get a call from someone that just flat out needs something. You're not going to get a call from Timbuktu if you have a that. I think that is a very good idea to have. I have lists of neighborhoods, lists of cities around Indianapolis that we serve, but something in more of a map form would probably be helpful. I agree. Owen, are you there?
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us about you and how you do things now?
Okay. Did you want me to do a little company bio?
Yeah, that'd be great. Sure.
That's up to you.
So this is my fourth year in business. And pretty much from the start, I was trying to focus on interior remodeling, residential. Although I think when I started, I was more open to doing commercial work. And I pretty much nixed that.
But now you want to do interior stuff.
Well, I was always, right from the start, I was pushing interiors. I really didn't want to be out doing windows and siding and decks, and didn't have quite the expertise in that I had in kitchen, finished carpentry, and tile work. So, and that's gone fairly well. I do still get inquiries for decks and different things, and I'll generally just try to refer them to somebody. So I am qualifying, I guess, in that respect. And I try to initially qualify based on schedule, because that's usually a kind of a big one. I'm right now probably booked out into June. So I try to let people know early on in the conversation that I'm not available to start right away. I guess, I tend more into upscale work. I don't do, I haven't really gotten into the real high-end projects. I think my max kitchen that I've done was maybe 50,000. You know, I'm not doing the $100,000 kitchens or anything, but I'm sort of in that middle area. I'm not generally, you know, I generally won't win the sort of the, you know, run-of-the-mill cabinet and laminate countertop replacement kind of thing either.
Usually the guys that get those are the one guy in a pickup truck that has no insurance or anything like that. Can I ask you one question? When you tell people that you're booked out, you know, during your initial conversation, what kind of feedback do you get?
People generally say that's fine, you know, we're not in a big hurry. Occasionally I'll get a response like, oh no, we need this done by a certain date, but that's much more uncommon.
Mm-hmm. You know, I will tell you, I'm, you know, typically booked out 6 months year round, and probably if I were to tell people right off the bat that I was booked out 6 months, I would never go on an appointment, just because, you know, there's enough guys out there that can get to them in a more timely manner. However, after going out and I know this really, I'm saying to not qualify in this way, and you, obviously you have to do whatever works for you. Once you go out and you spend a little bit of time in the people's home and you sell a little bit of sizzle, you know, and they really get excited about what you can do over what the guy that can get there next week can do, a lot of times what could be an objection based on scheduling becomes a, you know what, we're willing to wait on you. So I would, in my own personality, I would be cautious about bringing the schedule into it too soon.
Okay. I think the problem that I'm having is I'm running too many leads, I'm spending too much time running leads and doing estimates. And so I'm looking for any way to weed people out as opposed to trying to be
selective. Well, who are the ones you want to weed out? Which ones, you know, which ones are the ones you want to weed out?
What I'm saying. I'm not doing that. I'm just trying to cut down on running the leads as opposed to strategically looking at what qualifying questions do I need to be answering here.
When you hear no, you know, when you don't get a job, you know, do you know why that is? You know, has anybody shared with you why they're going in a different direction?
I've had a real hard time getting feedback from people when they select somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I'd say it's price-based.
Mm-hmm.
On the
That's what it usually is.
Let me ask you something as well. What percentage of the leads that you go on do you feel like this is a waste of my time? They're probably not going to be the best fit for me anyway.
If it's a non-referral, like website lead, I would say pretty high. I mean, it's over 50%. Good bit higher than that.
Yeah.
I'd have to think about that for a while to come up with a number.
Do you ever find yourself saying, okay, this is, you know, I've showed up, this is a waste of my time, but you do a bit anyway?
Yes.
Because, yeah. I mean, I guess the first step for me, when I started stepping back and saying no to projects that I didn't feel were going to be a good fit, and again, I'm not talking about a project that I don't get a good vibe from them or I get resistance. I'm talking in terms of I go look at the house and I go look at and I meet with the people and I get an impression that, you know, this is probably just not going to work for me for whatever reason. You know, maybe it's just, you know, I feel like I'm spinning my wheels and they're, you know, there's a point where you're being, you know, too hard on yourself and saying, I'm never going to be able to sell them, and a point at which you're saying, I don't want to sell them. I need to get out of here and move on to something else. And I guess that, to me, would be the first place I'd look to stepping back. If you're going on leads and you know, you're still doing estimates for projects that you just don't want or you just don't think are a good fit, I would start there, and I would start saying, you know, I do that occasionally. I will go out and, you know, maybe it's someone that we you know, that I just want to roll the dice because I don't know for sure what it's going to be like. I need to go meet him face to face, and I go meet him face to face, and you know, it just doesn't look like it's going to work. I'll send him a follow up note, and you know, I'll just tell him. And I think you do have to say no diplomatically, whether it's on the phone before you've ever met them or after you've met them and they're expecting an estimate, and you just don't want to submit one. You just don't want the project. And as I say that, you know, I want to qualify that by saying, you know, I say no for reasons of, you know, I when I go see someone, if the house is in a neighborhood or in an area, or you know, if I know that the value of the house is not going to support the renovation they want, it is a waste of time for me to bid it. You know, it's a waste of my effort and valuable time to put together something that's just not going to work for either one of us. So I
why?
Because
why, Chris? I mean, let's say it's an older neighborhood, but this couple have decided they're going to stay in that house because the economy being what it is, they're not going to get that little brownstone in Boston they've always wanted. So the hell with the neighborhood, they've got the money, I'm assuming, and you look at the house and say the house is worth $150K and they want to put $90 into it, that just doesn't make sense. Well, if they are going to stay in it the rest of their life and that's going to be their retirement home,
right,
maybe it does make sense.
I would totally run that. And if they made that clear, I would totally work for that client. And I totally get that some people want what they want and they're going to spend what they want, you know, if they're going to stay there. And I guess that's something that we haven't really touched on as far as a qualifying question is, you know, how long are you going to be in this house? And yeah, Chuck, I totally agree. If it's someone that says, we know we're not going to get, you know, we're not going to be able to get our value out right away, but we want to stay here and we want to make this right for us. Those are good clients, and that's somebody I would want to work for.
Okay.
You know, I think more what Chris was talking about was the people that live in the $100,000 house, and they want to do, you know, they give you their grand scheme of things, and you can tally it up in your head, and you can tell that it's going to be $90,000, but you can also tell by the way they're talking that they think it's going to be $40,000. Those are the ones where you have to kind of nip it in the bud and say, hey, look, you know.
Yeah, agreed.
Here's
yeah.
about what I think it's going to be. Is that anywhere close to what you were thinking? And if they say, oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, at what point, if we could get together on the price, are you prepared to move ahead on? Is this something you're wanting to get done? You know, tell me your timeline, things like that.
Darren, let me ask you this. At what point do you start talking about, you know, a number? You know, do you use that as a feeler in the early stages of your, you know, whether it's the first phone call or at the appointment? When do you start saying, well, you know, what's your budget? You know, when do you bring up cost?
It's at the initial appointment. You know, it's hard to do it before then. You know, over the phone, I mean, you know, we haven't walked through the basement. They haven't told me how much square footage they're wanting to finish, what they think their level of build-out's going to be. You know, so we really can't get into something like that. And typically the way I'll handle it, you know, I've got several hundred pictures in my book. You know, I can kind of price qualify them by saying, you know, we've done a project like very similar to what you're wanting to do. Here are some pictures of it. And if I remember correctly, that project came in at about X number of dollars. And at that point, I can gauge their reaction and see if we're on the same page or not. You know, if they say, holy shit, I want to be half of that, well, then, you know, we have to start talking about, you know, maybe there's some things that we can change around. That way I don't come back with some design that I've invested 10 hours in, and then they say, holy shit, I want to spend half of that.
Right. Yeah,
In my business, and I think with kitchens and bathrooms and interior work like Owen does, I think that would be a very easy thing to get a portfolio large enough where you could do that, you know, because you can look at a kitchen and tell within 10 grand what it's going to cost them.
Oh, that's something I'm a little weak on, too, is being able to ballpark stuff. But I do recognize the value in doing that.
I've heard some, I don't know if any of you know Paul Winans. Super, super nice guy. He's on the lecture circuit pretty regularly, speaks at the remodeling show. And his one of the things that he suggests is that if the number you give as a ballpark doesn't scare you a little, it's probably not the right number. if you're not worried that they're going to walk away, or if they're, you know, if you're not scared just a little bit of that number, you're probably lowballing it and you're setting yourself up for problems.
Yeah,
I agree.
If you win every job, you're not charging enough. That's the old axioms. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you're a fantastic closer. You know, I've got a pretty high close ratio, and I'm usually the highest.
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, and I guess that speak, you know, I think ballparking is a skill, and I think it's a skill you got to develop to really get at the heart of, or at least to start getting people thinking about what they want to spend. And, you know, hearing your approach, I think it's probably similar to mine. I can look back and most of the time when I've really spun my wheels or I've wasted time or, you know, or I've been discouraged because, you know, it just wasn't going to work. It was when I wasn't, you know, I was really, really active listening about all the things that they wanted, and I took detailed notes and really went out of my way to work hard because I wanted to give them what they wanted, but really didn't, you know, I really didn't approach that, okay, let's talk about investment, let's talk about what the things are, what your priorities are. Yeah, I've gotten burned a lot of times because I came back with their dream, and like you said, they wanted to spend half of what it was going to be, and, you know, not because they were trying to waste my time or because they had any, because it was, you know, them trying to waste my time. They just didn't know. They didn't know what things cost. They, you know, they had no idea. So without me giving them some idea and direction in that, you know, we really weren't having a meaningful conversation about their project, and I was wasting their time too.
Sure.
So, in terms of Chuck, tell us a little bit about, you know, your frustration as far as you know, feeling like you're not qualifying enough, or that you need to maybe sort out some of those that are just not productive.
Well, like a lot of you guys, I try to get a feel over the phone, you know, without asking a price point or anything like that. I like Darren, I kind of wait for the first meeting to throw out a number and kind of gauge the response. But I try to figure out if they've had any remodeling done in the past, you know, are they experienced with it? Do they know what the process involves? If they say yes, then I know that they at least have an idea of what things cost. You know, when did you do the last remodeling job? You know, that kind of stuff. If it's 10 years old, then maybe they don't know what things cost nowadays. If they had something done a couple of 3 years ago, then they have a pretty good idea of you know, at least a ballpark of what they're asking for.
Location, maybe not.
True. Depends on the extent of the remodel they're asking for versus what they had done.
Well, and whether the last guy they used came from Craigslist, and that's where they primarily choose their contractors from.
True.
You know, that can be a problem.
One of the ways that, of course, my website pre-qualifies a lot of people. You know, like Darren, I'm never the cheapest. I don't want that market. I can't serve that market well. I have a hard time myself and my guys working to a level that's going to allow me to make money at those low dollars. And I can't turn my guys off. I can't say, okay, today you're working, I want your $15 an hour work because that's all I bid, when normally we're working $75 an hour
right. Person
work.
Right.
So I don't want to get involved in that. You know, it screws everything up. So once we've talked on the phone a little bit and I know their geographic location, they give me a rough idea of what they had in mind. I know they've been to my website. My website's very informative. Maybe too informative, but at least they know where I'm coming from when we meet. The biggest frustration now probably is pricing, which we're not going to solve in today's webinar, I know. But when you're looking at doing a substantial remodel and they get a price on that, and then they look around and say, well, you know, Christ, I could buy a new home, not new, but new to them home in some of those markets for, you know, a little bit more than I'm, you know, going to put an addition on for. Well, I can't argue that fact, sure, you know, but you obviously don't want to move because that's why you're calling me. So materials haven't gone down. My labor hasn't gone down. My taxes and insurance certainly haven't gone down. You know, what do you, you know, so it's always a price issue because, you know, like Darren said, there's always a guy in a pickup truck that will come in and say, I'll do it for half that price.
Right. Well, you know, and the work that we do, you know, it's all one-of-a-kind prototype stuff. You know, one-off prototypes, those cost money.
You know, so like Darren and you know, Chris, I know you guys have sales books. I have sales books. I go through and say, okay, here's what you get. You know, I've been around a long time. I'll be around a long time. Everything's to code. Everything's to spec. You know, I do design build work so they can see what the project's going to look like before I even pick up a piece of wood if they want to go that route. You know, I can use Chief Architect or Solid Builder or whatever and say, okay, the other guy's not going to give you this. You know, is this important to you? Does this have a value to you? And everybody says, yeah, you know, I understand that, you know, the best costs a little bit more. But I still get calls from people, like you say, Darren, that don't have a clue. You know, they've been on Craigslist or they watch any of a number of TV shows that show work being done for, you know, zero. And they think, well, why can't you do that? You know, so right. There's always some education at all meetings. I try to give them, and even the ones I don't get, which are, you know, a fair amount, I try to leave them educated for the next guy so that they're not totally clueless when they get another guy to come in and bid the project. So that's a little bit of waste of my time, potentially, but I don't feel bad giving them the information.
Sure. You know. What do you think your close ratio is, Chuck? How much... You know, how many jobs you bid to sell a good one?
I probably get 50%.
Yeah.
You know, once I've had a chance to talk with them, and I tell them our first meeting, I'd like to have an hour of their time. You know, I don't go in and you know, tell them I need 10 minutes. I want an hour. I want to talk to them. I want to get to know them a little bit, build a little bit of a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps the close ratio. Yeah, it could be better, but, you know, certainly could be worse.
How many leads do you run in a year?
Not many. A lot of my leads are referrals, friend of a friend of a friend kind of thing, which is always a higher close rate for the most part.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Some come pre-qualified. If they don't know cost, they certainly know me, and they've seen some of my work. From the website stuff that I get, which is fairly new, my site's not been up all that long, maybe a year and a half or so. Close rate there is not as good as the referral. So I'll say maybe 25% from the web, rough numbers. But I'm getting more leads lately, you know, from the web than I did. So it's taken that long to get ingrained, I think, into the local search engines and, you know, all the other things that go into that SEO kind of stuff.
Sure. I will say that, you know, requests for work, you know, are up, you know, just about everywhere. That anybody I've talked to has said, you know, they've seen leads picking up. So, you know, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I guess a comment.
There's a pent-up demand, you know.
Go ahead, Chris.
A comment that I would make is that I guess I take somewhat of a lazy approach to selling. I'll freely admit that, in that I want to have people be as qualified as possible before they ever call me. And not that I want someone to look at the site and eliminate themselves or, you know, so, you know, something along those lines. I guess I'm looking to attract the most people, the people that are the most qualified or that or are the best fit for me. You know, when we went through that marketing process about, you know, I talk about the ideal client, and you know, I interviewed my past clients that were really a really great fit. You know, we did really great work together. They enjoyed the experience. The company did well financially, and you know, it was just a good experience for all parties involved. And identifying, okay, well, why, you know, what did they like about us? What did they like about the experience? And then how can I engineer those things that they liked the most into my marketing materials so I get more of those people calling me up? And I think that really is where it has to start. The cliche is that you can't be all things to all people. I don't think in this day and age you're going to be successful if you say, I'm a kitchen remodeler and here's some kitchens I built, and I can do bathrooms and here's some bathrooms I can build. I think you have to come up with a message that demonstrates, you know, why you're differentiates you from everyone else. You know, what superior value are you bringing that other people don't? And maybe there are things that you take for granted, like keeping a clean job site, or you know, protecting people's property and, you know, all those little hot buttons that we know people care about that maybe you're not really communicating, that you're not communicating in your materials. You know, we talk about referrals, and of course those people are going to come to you with, you know, the best appreciation for who you are and what you do. I think referrals are a double-edged sword because referrals come to you by way of people you care about that you want to keep happy and you want to keep referring people to you. But, you know, I've had some stinkers of referrals in the past where, you know, that they were not someone that was going to be a good fit for us. And it's difficult sometimes to say no to a referral because you have that desire to keep your, you know, your referral source, probably a past client or, you know, a vendor or someone you have a relationship with that you want to keep. It's hard to say no sometimes to those that are not a really good fit. And that's why I really strongly recommend that you cultivate a lot of, you know, as many lead sources as you possibly can. And I've been guilty myself over the years of putting too many eggs in one basket, whether it was working with one designer on project after project after project. And, you know, if that person would have disappeared or got sick or moved away, I'd have been in a real rough way because I wasn't investing the time in, you know, generating leads from a website or from maybe another designer or from, you know, some other source. The more leads you're getting, obviously, the more selective you can be. The more selective you should be. The risk that I think I've always had in the back of my mind when it comes to qualifying was, you know, what happens when I overqualify? And I thought of that when Owen was talking about, you know, telling people, you know, I can't start right away. I don't want to scare someone away that might be a really good fit. It's just that they don't maybe know the right questions to ask, or maybe, you know, if I put too much emphasis on, you know, lead time for starting your project. And I think you kind of were talking about that, Darren, as far as, you know, your approach and you having projects that are 6 months out. I try, and I guess when someone gives me a lead time, I try and talk about first and foremost about the process and how long it can take to develop a project, because if I say I'm 3 months out and someone wants to start right away, well, the natural inclination is for them to say, oh, well, I'm going to move on because I really need to get going. But what they may not understand is that to really even get started on your project is going to take 6 weeks or 8 weeks or however involved the project is. We need to meet. We need to talk. We need to design your space. We need to make selections, and that's part of a process. And just educating people and really even think about it on your own level. Yeah, you may not be able to start a project for 3 months, but if you're not developing the projects that you do need to start in 3 months, you're going to be in a hard way. And so that speaks, I think, to how you manage your pipeline, how you manage that future work, and how you you know, communicate to people that, you know, I'm eager to start with you as well, but we have some things. You know, it's talking about how you put projects together. You know, we'll have an initial consultation where I'll listen, and I really want to find out and understand, you know, what you're trying to accomplish and all of the things that you know, that are existing in your home that are going to affect your project, and you talk on from there. And, you know, I do, you know, when you say qualifying, I think, you know, it's not so much a checklist where you're having, you know, you're putting them through the paces to see if they work. A lot of it for me is selling in that phone call. You know, granted, I want to eliminate them if we're not a good fit, but I also want to start the sales process in that call. And that's just as much qualifying me to them and saying, you know, I'm really eager to start your project too. But really, to build you an amazing space, something that you're really going to be happy with and that is going to meet your needs the best, it really, there are a lot of decisions to make, and we're very, very detailed in our process. And so we're going to start with X and Y and Z, and we're going to take it on from there. And I think that's an important distinction to make.
And, you know, when you're enjoying your kitchen or your bathroom 5 years from now, the extra 5 or 6 weeks that you waited to get everything exactly the way you wanted it is going to seem very minuscule by comparison.
Right.
You know, I'm a firm believer that the qualifying would start with your website. You know, my vehicles that I have wrapped and all of my promotional materials, my website is way more predominant than my phone number because I would rather have somebody go to my website, poke around, and kind of qualify themselves a little bit. You know, if they're wanting four walls and a ceiling and they don't even want to put carpet down, you know, they need to find their out-of-work neighbor to bang that out for them. You know, I'm not the guy. So I would rather that they go see some of my projects rather than see my name on the side of my truck, call me up and say, hey, I want you to come out and talk to me, and then me get there to discover that it's four walls and a ceiling and a painted floor so that their kids have a place to play. So, you know, if qualify your customers, I think, you know, it goes back to Tim Nagel and the talks that he used to have about determining who your ideal customer is, you know, who you want to pick up the phone and call you, and develop everything that you can to get that person to call and less of the other people to call, and then you'll spend less time qualifying, which, you know, is the ultimate goal. Now, you know, during an initial conversation, you know, I'll usually try to find out how many other quotes they're anticipating, you know, with the understanding that, you know, I've told people before, you know, probably half the people you call are not going to get back with you, even though construction is down and people are hungry. For whatever reason, people still don't get quotes back out. So, you know, bear that in mind that you're going to have that problem. You know, if they've remodeled before, I think Chuck mentioned that, you know, I kind of want to know how the process went, you know, not whether they're price conditioned, but how the process went. Did it go pretty smooth? You know, if the guy says, you know what, it was 4 years ago and we're still in litigation over it, yeah, that's kind of a pretty big red flag.
That's not good.
Yeah, and, you know, those are all, obviously you can't go down the checklist and say, okay, any previous experience, check, you know, stuff like that. You just got to kind of feel them out and work it into the conversation, but you also have to know what the major points that you want to hit are. You know, and I've been guilty, man. I less than a year ago, I did an $80,000 bid for a guy, and I got it back to him, and he said, what can you do for $15,000? You know, I mean, I just totally misread it, and it's going to happen. You know, all you're trying to do is to increase your batting average. That's all you're trying to do. And, you know, 10 points on a batting average is huge.
Owen, I know we've talked a lot about, you know, we've talked mainly about philosophy and approach, and we haven't really talked about the nuts and bolts or what is really said. I guess the follow-up question for you, I mean, given what we've talked about, what's your, you know, what's your response to that?
Yeah, it seems like I'm kind of curious if there's information that you're gathering on that initial phone call that is conversational, and you're just so accustomed to it that like, are there specific things that you're always trying to find out? You're just not really thinking about, you know, you don't have a checklist sitting in front of you, but you've done it 100 times, so.
Yeah, myself, I don't.
Or are you just looking for a general feel from the person?
I think it's a combination. I think the first and foremost things I like to start with are, you know, where's your home located? Because that's, you know, that geographic qualifier is a, you know, it's a really big one. If they're way the far out of the way, or, you know, it tells me a lot. Even if I'm sitting at the computer and they give me the address, hell, I can pull it up and I can see what the neighborhood's like. I know whether I've worked there before. I know, you know, the kinds of homes that are there, and I can use that as a context for what they describe for me that they want. I guess to run down what I, you know, what the typically the course that I direct the conversation, and you can't always, you know, steer people down a given road. They're going to want to talk about what they want to talk about. Sometimes it's very much them asking me. You know, there's some people that are very inquiring, and they know exactly what they want to know about you first. And, you know, I try to let those people, you know, take the conversation, and then I can kind of pepper the conversation with questions of my own. But I start with geographic first. I don't really get into any cost conversations with them unless I'm really on the fence or I really, you know, sometimes those conversations are, you know, this is clearly not the person that I want to go see. And so I'll throw them objections from my part or at least disqualifiers that I'll, you know, try and tell them, oh, well, you know, unfortunately at this time I'm not looking at new projects until X or I'm booked out till Y or, you know, my average range of cost for that project is X or Y and, you know, is that about what you're thinking of? And that's just not necessarily – I'm just trying to get them to, you know, eliminate themselves if I think that, you know, it's just not going to be a good fit. But I start with geography, and then I think I, you know, most of the time I'll ask them to describe their project and, you know, what they're looking for. And, you know, through that conversation, I'll try and demonstrate, you know, that I'm, you know, that I have some, you know, some sensitivity for wanting to really understand what they want first and foremost, to listen really well. And then, you know, I probably would say I do some selling in there, and then I talk about, you know, past experiences or past projects, or, you know, through the questions that I ask, demonstrate, you know, that some of it is really hard to quantify and to say, okay, these are the things that I say, because I think any conversation, any interaction that you have with someone is on some level it's selling, you know, whether I'm face to face or whether I'm over the phone, I'm trying to, you know, put little nuggets in there here and there that kind of demonstrate why we are unique. Or if they say something about, you know, a pet or maybe a past experience where they weren't happy and they give me a reason why it wasn't. Maybe they didn't like the people in the house, or, you know, maybe we got a call earlier today that I overheard my office manager was on, and it was someone that had really searched me out and really wanted me because they, you know, connected with the website and they said, you know, I've been paranoid because I hired a deck project. I hired a person for a deck project. They came and the very next day my house was broken into. And since then, I've been very paranoid about having, you know, hiring people in my house. And, you know, I really connected with the fact that you seem to care about, you know, people's property, people's houses. And so sometimes they'll give you that, and it's just, you know, you just take that ball and you run with it, and you take the conversation in that direction. So I can't say, you know, speaking for myself, I don't have a set checklist or, you know, in front of me. We have an intake. We use a piece of software that gives me information that I need to get. And sometimes you get that info, name, address, email. Sometimes that stuff I get at the beginning, and sometimes I get at the end. It just kind of depends on how the conversation goes. How do you handle the information you want, Darren?
Very similar. You know, it's mostly an intuitive process. I'll make one comment when you were talking about price, you know, that it usually doesn't get brought up. What I have typically found is if price gets brought up, it gets brought up by the prospect, and then they're probably not a good fit. You know, they'll say something along the lines of, hey, you know, I'm wanting to get this stuff done. I've only got $7,000 to spend. I've already talked to 5 guys, and they're 15, so I don't want to waste your time if you're going to be that much too. You know, and so typically that's the only time price that really ever enters into that initial conversation, and it's never a good thing. I wouldn't see a problem, though, with both of these guys developing a checklist. You know, what questions would you like to have answered? You know, I definitely wouldn't go down it in a checklist form, but it wouldn't hurt to have it sitting in front of you as you're talking to people on the phone, and you know, you could maybe refer to it and just kind of see if you can touch on any of that kind of stuff. You know, I always like to know if we're getting a ton of other bids. You know, I've been one of 9 before. I know Chris knows about that, and I actually just got them signed up the other day. I was the most expensive of 9 contractors, but I could do what nobody else could do. And if you go to my website, you'll see what that is. So you know, definitely being the unique guy has been wonderful for me. You know, when my competitor does a few basements a year and I do a few basements a month, that's a pretty powerful statement that we know more about how to do what we do than everybody else does. So, you know, one thing to think about, you know, everybody talks about it costs a few dollars more to get the best. Every person that sits in front of them is going to think they're the highest person and that it's going to cost a few dollars to get the best. So when you tell the customer that, he's already heard it five or six other times. You know, and everybody says the same thing, and that's the downfall with trying to be unique, when everybody goes out and says the same thing.
Darren, how long are your sales calls, or that initial call?
Initial call is probably an hour and a half, and a good 30 minutes of that is in the middle, me taking measurements, you know, and if you guys do a lot of measurements, you know, I've got a Bosch laser tape measure, and you'd be surprised, you know, I always manage to whip that laser tape measure out in front of everybody else,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, you stand on one side of the basement, and you hit that other wall with that point, you know, and you start getting measurements, and wow, you know, the other guys, man, they were stretching out tape measures, and it took forever. Well, you know what, we do a lot of these, and we've developed a process where we can be very efficient at what we do, and we actually have lasers that we lay everything out with, and once we're complete with the framing stage, I can come down and show you how our framing in your basement is more square than what your four basement walls are, and consequently it's more square than what your upstairs is. You'll be surprised. And then, you know, people will be like, wow, you know, this guy's a little different than everybody else. You know, seven guys come out with a tape measure, I come out with a laser, you know, who are they going to remember? But anyway, an hour and a half initial call, 30 minutes is probably taking measurements, and you know, most of the time I can take measurements in 10 or 15 minutes, but it's good to give them 30 minutes to look through that picture book, because most of the time when I come back up, there will be things highlighted, and they'll refer to those pictures. You know, we really like this bar, can we put something like this here? And now at that point, you know, we've gotten farther along the design process, but now I've also got a way to price qualify them. You know, I could say, yeah, you know, we built that bar. We've done a similar bar to that four or five times, and usually it's in the $12,000 to $14,000 range. Is that about what you were thinking? And let them tell you. You know, if they say, you know, I was really looking for $3,000, or you know, that doesn't seem bad. Well, then, you know, maybe we can upgrade to granite countertops or stretch the size out a little bit more. You know, and just get the overall dollar cost of the job up a little bit. You know, just
and did you say earlier that you were that you often spend as much as 30 minutes on the initial phone call?
It can be, right? Sure, absolutely, it can be. You know, I'll, you know, you're contemplating doing your basement. That's fantastic. You know, tell me where you are in the process. You know, have you went out to some home stores? Have you looked at some? You know, have you seen some of the stuff your neighbors have? What do you like? What do you don't like? And, you know, usually I'm talking to the lady of the house, you know. Mm-hmm. Never let it be thought that the wife isn't going to be the one making the decisions. And Chris can probably back this up. You know, you will sell much more when you actively have the woman of the house engaged in every decision and every thought process than if you talk to the man of the house as the decision maker, because that's not the way it is anymore. But, yeah, an initial conversation, you know, sometimes it's 15 minutes, sometimes it's as much as 30 minutes. You know, I'm going to make sure I answer all their questions. And, you know, if they tell me they've already gotten four or five bids, you know, I'll ask them, you know, is there a reason you didn't choose one of those companies that you're still looking?
Is that something you asked, that you asked them to?
I have, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, they'll say, hey, you know what, I've already had four estimates. Have you gotten them back yet? And a lot of times they'll say, well, you know, I had four people come out, but I only got one price. I see, and is there a reason that you didn't choose that guy? You're wanting something to compare him to, or you just didn't like him? Price was more, price was less. You know, kind of share with me what you're thinking. If you do it in a non-threatening manner, you know, you can, you know, I'm here to help you. You know, and as far as the sooner you can get that across to a homeowner, the better off you are.
Do you ask them any questions about their process as far as, I mean, are you asking them without them offering, like, you know, what other companies are you talking to, or is that?
The question that I usually try to work in somewhere is exactly that. Tell me where you are in the process to get your basement finished. Are you looking for something in the next 6 months, next year? I don't care what they tell me. You know, they can say, I'm going to start tomorrow. I'm not going to say, hey, I'm booked out 6 months, thanks, have a great day. I just want to know where they're at, because then I can find out if they're getting other bids. You know, if, for whatever thing, you know, hey, you know what, we got to get the estimates back, and then we have to go to the bank and blah, blah, blah. You know, yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to ask people questions. I mean, you know, everybody thinks the homeowners hold all the cards and they hold them very close to their vest and they don't give you any information. And I think a lot of that is because as contractors, we're very hesitant to give out information to other people, and we hold things very close to our vests until we're absolutely sure about something. But, you know, if you call me and you're wanting me to come out and do something for you and you're unwilling to share any information of that with me, you've just qualified yourself right out of me coming and talking to you. You know, because if that's the way the relationship's going to start, that you're going to be afraid to answer any questions that I might have because you think I might take advantage of you, I don't want to come out and talk to you.
Okay.
How do you feel about that, Chris?
I agree for the most part. I think I try to be very much a partner. I try to couch our relationship, the start of our relationship, as, you know, I'm here to help you get the best value and to get everything that you want out of your project. I'm not here to spend every dime that you have. You know, if I asked what your budget was, it's not because I want to know how many pennies you have so that I can get all of them. It's so that I can tailor your project to best fit your needs, because I completely realize that every project has a budget. I don't care where your house is. I don't care how much money you have to spend. There is a budget for every project, and that is definitely the case now more than ever. And so, you know, if you tell me that your budget is X, then I'm going to do my best to try and design a project that will meet that need. And if your budget number will not anywhere near come close to what you want, I'm going to tell you that. And, you know, I'm not here to, you know, I'm not here for some dog and pony show or to sell you a project that you don't need. I'm here to find out, you know, what it is that you do need. And if we're a great fit, then I want to help you get the best balance of form and function and budget possible, so that you can be, you know, ecstatic with the things that I build for you. Many of the decisions that you'll have to make in your project will be driven by, you know, what your investment amount needs to be. And it's always a balance. There's always a balance between, you know, your lifestyle and what you want to experience in your house and what your house is worth, how long you're going to be there, what you can realize at resale. And, you know, if I ask you how long you're going to be in your home, it's because I want to gauge, you know, are we designing this project for you, or are we designing this project for the next person that's going to own your house? Because I can tell you that if you're not going to be in your house, you know, at least 2+ years, then, you know, you're not going to get the most value out of the things that I'm going to build you, and it's probably not going to work because, you know, you're just not going to get the return that you need.
Exactly. I think the best way, you know, I've said it before, the quicker you can get from the opposite side of the table as in an adversarial relationship to sitting on the same side of the table looking over the project and deciding how you're going to get it accomplished, the better off you'll be.
Now, Chris and Darren, correct me if I'm wrong. You guys typically do. Your average ticket's going to be, you know, 30s to 70s. You're not doing small jobs, small craftsman type jobs. Not looking for windows and doors, tiling a bathroom. It's much bigger typically. Is that correct?
Typically, yes. Although I will tell you that after we've done a project for a homeowner, you know, we become the go-to company for that. You know, we'll get called, hey, you know what, you guys did our basement last year, we're talking about doing counters and backsplash, will you come out and talk to me? Absolutely, because 9 times out of 10 I'm the only guy talking to them. So,
okay.
But that's not anything where you have to worry about qualifying, because that's one of those gimmies that's just kind of nice.
Right, and I guess what I was getting at is, you know, on my end, still, and I enjoy the variety of work, you know, I'll do $70,000 or $80,000 additions or kitchens, but at the same time, I don't mind, you know, doing a week-long painting project.
Sure.
If I've got the guys to do it, hey, why not? Could lead to something else.
And you know,
Owen's the same kind of guy. He's looking at a variety of different jobs, maybe out of necessity or maybe just because he likes the variety. And that, I think, how you qualify a customer in those varying price ranges will change based on the scope of what they're having you guys bid or even contemplate bidding. Would you agree? Or would you use the same process, whether it's a $5,000 tile job or a $50,000 addition?
I don't think the process would really change. I think my appreciation for the time investment versus what I'm going to get out of it, it would have to come into play. And my accountant uses a really, he uses a phrase that I really like to quote, and that is the juice worth the squeeze? You know, is what you're going to get out of that project worth all the time it takes to chase it? And so I would say that, you know, for the smaller projects, I would want to be doing that one call close. I would be wanting to, you know, because I, you know, the return is going to be less. I think I would have to demand that, you know, I'm not saying I'm demanding of the client. I'm demanding of myself that, okay, I need to go into this knowing that, you know, if it's a $5,000 project, you know, I need to minimize the time it takes me to get this across the finish line, because if it takes me as much time to plan and sell and design a $5,000 project as it does for me a whole bathroom, I'm wasting my time. I'm not, you know, I'm making less to take on that smaller project. And that, you know, I totally get that there has to be a different approach. If your ticket items are smaller and you've got to do more of them, you know, I'm a variety guy too. And when I was doing all the construction, I did enjoy doing the quick, smaller projects because it was different, it was unique, and it gave me the opportunity to build other things. But as a business person, I look at those as much more of a return perspective. And I look in terms of, okay, what resources am I devoting to this? And what am I going to have to do to mobilize for this smaller project? Because, you know, mobilization to me is a fixed cost in some regard. No matter what the size of project is, I still got to invest so much time in paperwork, so much time in, you know, logistics and setup and getting all the pieces on the board to get it going. So, you know, if I was looking at that as, you know, from a business model perspective, you have to demand of yourself that you're going to bring those to close faster so that you're still enjoying, you know, a reasonably good return on them.
I would agree with that. And, you know, it's, I also understand the point of I'll go out and do this in the hopes that it'll lead to bigger jobs later. You know, you got to make your money today, not next month or next week or next year. So, you know, I would be very hesitant to do any kind of favors on any kind of jobs like that. And I know that's not what you're talking about, but I just wanted to bring that up, you know, that a job has to carry a full labor burden and a full profit burden. And you know, at some point, you have to realize that there are jobs that are too small. And the guy that have the slogans that no job too small, they're the guys that don't know what their costs are.
I just think that you know, as time's gone on and I've gotten to be a bigger company, it's harder for me to go back and do the smaller jobs because I'm investing, you know, in logistics. There's a minimum investment that I have to bring into the table, and I find that it typically prices me out of those really smaller, you know, like a tile project. I have the means and the ability and the people to do it, but I think the people that are most successful at combining end up making different divisions to handle those different styles and sizes of projects. Like they have a handyman division for smaller things, and then they do, then they have another team that handles the majority of their, and that even I think applies to the actual production involved. I think the people that you have to have for those smaller things have to be, you know, it takes a different approach, a different kind of craftsman to be successful at those smaller projects versus someone that, say, you know, even if it's just a manager that does your larger ones.
I think I'm kind of running into that, even as a one-man company. You know, if I go out and look at a bathroom where, you know, they just want a fiberglass tub and, you know, there isn't extensive tile work, they're not doing a custom shower, and I start looking at what am I going to have to sell this at to cover, you know, 3 weeks overhead or something, or 2 weeks overhead or whatever it is, I'm pretty consistently going to lose it. One of the things I was wondering, like, is that a legitimate qualifier, or am I, again, maybe losing an opportunity there?
Well, you know, if what they want is not what you do and what you have set your business model up to provide, you need to qualify that and realize that that person is not who you want to be working for. And that goes back to really figuring out who your ideal client is, you know, and figuring out your ideal client is figuring out how much they are willing to invest in the product and service that you provide. You know, you don't want to be the $59.95 bathroom in a day guy. So, you know, you need to make sure you don't go out and talk to those people. So, number one, you need to set your process up where those people kind of weed themselves out in the beginning by realizing you're not the person to do that. And then I think you also need to set your qualifying process up a little bit so that you can figure out if they're looking for that $59.95 bathroom in a box before you go out and talk to them. And then if you do get out there and they decide, you figure out that they're not the $59.95 guy, you know, that's what they want and that's not what you're going to do, you have to have the guts to just say, hey, you know, unfortunately, this is not the type of work we do. My business model does not allow me to produce this type of work in a cost-effective manner, as opposed to somebody who doesn't have the means that I have to bring this project to completion. And then tell them you're not interested in bidding it. And, you know, cut the cord. So, you know, I would start with, who do you want to work for tomorrow? If you could have a guy call that wanted some work done, you know, how much would that job be? How long would it take? Where would it be? You know, and start there.
Well, we're running low on time. Chuck, is there anything you wanted to follow up to?
No, I don't think so. I think you guys have, you know, covered a lot of the stuff. You know, it's a challenging market, as you both know right now. You know, one of the customers I'm talking with now on an addition job, you know, called five people. Three of them were out of business. You know, and they were in business a year ago. You know, had to be licensed, bonded, and insured because they both work for the city and they're under scrutiny. So if working for the city, they can't go under the table. You know, so automatically they were thrown into a different level of contractor. But by the same token, they're getting, you know, five different bids. You know, so it's an interesting dynamic. You know, people are educated with the Internet, or most of them. You know, they read all the websites. You know, some claim you got to get at least three. Some say that's full of crap. Some say pick the guy you like to work with, and, you know, money's not a real big deal. You know, so they're conflicted on what to ask and how many people to talk to, and you know, what's you know, the value they're going to receive. So, to me, the pre-qualification issue is it's education, and I guess maybe I'm spending too much time educating. And you know, I don't know if that's good or bad. I think the education helps set me apart, because I am willing to share, but maybe I go overboard. Maybe it's too much education. I don't know. I got to work on that.
I don't know that there's ever too much education. You know, people are sponges, especially today. You know, people are very, very hesitant, very leery to spend money. You know, back when refinances were flowing like water, people didn't care if they spent $30,000 on their house because it was going to be worth $80,000 more year after next. So, you know, there really wasn't a worry about that kind of stuff. You know, you're still in business. A bunch of the guys they already called are out of business. You know, that right there is a very strong marketing point for you to make. It is a tough economy, and I don't know if I am in a little bubble that's fantastic, but, you know, I'm knocking them dead. You know, I've already sold more this year than I sold all of last year. And, you know,
that's
last
awesome.
Year was my best year in business. So, I really think you can choose to buy into all of that stuff, or you can find ways to make yourself different and better. You know, let's say 10 years ago you had to have 0.1% of the remodeling business that was in your geographical market that you served. Maybe today you have to be able to get 1% of a smaller market, but you've increased your market share, and now you're making more money. So,
right.
You know, just because the market went to half of what it used to be doesn't mean you have to settle for half of what you used to be, what you used to make. You just have to become a better seller and sell more, you know, and it just means working harder.
Right, and smarter. Yeah. Well, I will say thanks for putting this little webinar together, guys. I do appreciate your time and effort.
Well, I appreciate you guys hanging around for the conversation. We'll certainly post a recording of this once we get it downloaded, and it'll end up on the forum, and then hopefully we can generate maybe some conversation on the forum. Darren, thank you, as always, for your time. And I will wish you all the best of luck. Thanks a lot.
Now, I will say, either one of you guys want to reach out to me by email, you know, I can be reached through my website or through the Remodel Crazy forum. If you have any questions, don't be afraid to email them.
Appreciate the offer.
I'll say the same as well. Take care, everyone.
All right, gentlemen, have a good day.
Thanks, guys. All right, thanks, guys.